right.
Welcome, everybody. It's been a minute. Welcome to Movie Boners, minus one of the boners, I guess you could say. But we are joined today by our friend JR. It's been a minute since we've seen you, man. I'm stoked to talk to you. It's good to see you. You look good.
Thank you. Thank you. You too, man. It's great to be back here.
Yeah. I mean, minus one of them, but he's been having fun on his end of stuff, so
I'm sure being a newfound father is a lot of fun. Yeah,
well, absolutely. Father of two, yeah, because they had the previous one, so this is God the second bless. One. But yeah, two children under the age of like three.
Ooh,
heavy household.
That must
right?
be chaotic. Yeah,
I'm absolutely. Sure I got the age wrong, Jake. I'm sorry. Yeah, man. So yeah, man. Welcome, everybody. Obviously, now, JR, it's been a minute since you've been with us, so obviously yes, you're probably has, noticing yeah. you have to have known we changed our intro quite a while ago.
I can't remember that well from a while ago, okay. honestly. Yeah.
Well, obviously, there's no beer to open tonight.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, that's okay. Yeah. That's totally okay.
We stopped doing that earlier this year. Yeah, so.
All right.
This is our intro these days, so
right. that works for me.
Why don't you go ahead, let us know where people can find you, kind of what you've been up to, and then we'll absolutely. Get into this.
So I was on the show over a year ago at this point to discuss this. Time flies, right? To discuss this gothic horror short film that I made called Headstone of Solitude, which is out on YouTube at my channel, Sid Cinematics. And then for the past year or so, I've been working on this feature film, which I'm here to talk about today, titled Edge X, which is sort of inspired by Requiem for a Dream. And, you know, funny enough, I actually mentioned the film briefly the last time I was on here. So it's cool to, you know, finally have that come into existence.
Yeah, definitely, man. Yeah. No, this was one when you had brought it, up, last time you were on here. Which, holy crap, over a year ago.
Yeah, that's been a while.
Blur.
Yeah.
I know you had mentioned it briefly, and Jake and I have been kind of anticipating and waiting to hear more about it, and then you let us know, hey, here it is. So,
yeah.
congrats on
Thank
pulling
you.
Off this actual feature film, which is, if I remember right, like 2 hours and 8
yes.
minutes.
Yes, yeah. exactly that, yeah.
It is. That is a big feat. You took a lot of big chances with this one, dude. Like,
yes.
you swung for the fences.
I did,
Jake and I could not be more proud of you for doing that.
Thank you, man.
That is a huge undertaking for so many reasons. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest would be just creativity. And then also, how do you pull together this cast, this script, to bring this all to fruition?
Yeah.
So that would be my first question is like, I mean, the initial undertaking had to have been a little daunting, but you did. Yeah,
absolutely. I'm still kind of figuring out how I did all of that. Honestly, you know, a lot of it doesn't necessarily feel real to me, especially when we premiered it, like last week to like a public audience. That just felt like a fever dream, you know, I couldn't believe it was happening, but it's been a really, really lengthy process, you know? And I came up with this concept for the film back when I was like 17 in high school, like 2+ years ago. And then last year when I was 18, I finally just, you know, I did it. I directed the film, you know, and I basically went straight from my short film, Headstone of Solitude, to working on this film, Edge X. And I think it was a very personal process, and I discovered a lot about myself and a lot about the people working on the film. And, you know, as you mentioned, like pulling together like a larger cast of people to do this, you know, it was sort of like this really interpersonal connection we all formed, you know, it was really special. And a lot of the people who worked on this film are around the same age as myself. So that also added like another layer to it. It was like, you know, just a bunch of young people making a movie, man. It was really, really cool.
You know, one of my all-time favorite movies, at least favorite horror films, and don't worry, I will connect the dots. Fear not.
That's okay.
The original Evil Dead. And one of the main reasons why that movie is such a favorite of mine is exactly what you just said.
Yeah,
it's a
Sam
movie.
Raimi was like in his early 20s. When
it was a movie made by friends with each other because they simply wanted to make a film. So that alone to me is like, nailed it. That's
thank it. You. Yeah.
What other reason to take these stories and to like be with your friends, be with like-minded people to share in creativity and just enjoy telling stories. So
yeah.
Congrats, man.
Thank you so much.
Jake and I, so this was funny. So Jake and I obviously watched the film separate from each other. We didn't really talk about it a lot together. But Jake sent me his questions, and I was going over my questions compared to his, and I was like, Jake, you and I wrote the same questions.
I'm looking forward to answering them. That's cool.
The first one that I gotta like figure out, I didn't necessarily try to figure it out while watching it, but afterwards I'm like, all right, so this could go in a few different directions, but where did you get the title Edge X?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me that, and I kind of always give them like a simplified answer, like, you know, it sounded cool. I mean, it's there's nothing too deep about the title, aside from the obvious that I think the characters are mostly on edge. So I just figured that would be the most appropriate title. So it's just kind of a simple answer.
You know what? Simplicity is good, man.
Yeah,
that's a great answer. I like how you put that. They're just all on edge. From the get-go, they're on edge.
You know, it's a little edgy too, the material itself. It's a little dark. It's a little edgy, you know.
A little.
So it's like, yeah, just
a little, JR, a little. You made a film that's all about addiction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Little would would argue you, my friend.
Yeah.
Well, I guess before we really answer, I guess you should kind of, I'll let you be the one to tell the audience what Edge X is kind of about.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't want you to spoil your own movie, but
that's
go ahead and
let
us know what Edge X is, and then we're going to get into some heavy questions if that's
cool.
All right.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. Edge X to me, you know, my interpretation of it is number one, I think the general definitive answer is that it's about adolescent substance abuse, you know, and that's a very real issue. And I think a lot of people who walk down this road of addiction throughout their life and struggle with that, I think it really does start at a young age. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to start at an older age. I think a lot of that is rooted in our youth, you know, and in our adolescence. And I also think a lot of that is derived from, you know, derivative from our environment as well, which I think the film focuses a lot on. But to answer your question, you know, Edge X is really just primarily about a group of young people who sort of become intertwined by this chaotic adolescent fueled mess. You know, it's kind of scary. You know, it's a scary reality for a lot of people from all age groups, but especially mine. That's a problem that I can directly look at and look at some people around me and see that it's, you know, it's just a reality for people.
Yeah, you're hitting the nail on the head, bud.
Yeah.
Well, this episode's going to get a little heavier than I think initially thought, but that's okay because we like doing this. So there's a reason we don't have beer on the show anymore. It's because I am sober. So Jake has supported me on going sober. You are correct in saying that addiction does start stemming from the youth. So I started drinking in my teens. Actually, it was a little bit earlier than teens. So totally get where you're coming from with that. To get kind of personal, if you don't mind, and obviously,
absolutely, I appreciate you sharing
boundaries or whatever things that you'd rather keep to yourself, by all means. But the substance abuse that you show, it's pretty graphic. As someone who has watched firsthand that kind of environment more than one time, more than a few times. Do these characters have like personal, have you kind of dealt with this stuff from a firsthand perspective or just from what you've seen, kind of learned about, or
well,
I guess how personal is the material?
I appreciate you sharing your story and asking me that. And that's number one. I appreciate that. Thank you for telling me that. Second off, though, I can't necessarily say that I relate firsthand to these characters, but there are a lot of characters who are very loosely and some directly based on people that I've known and people that I've been close to and that sort of thing. So, you know, a lot of the characters and some of the plot points are based on real individuals. And also a lot of, I think, of the philosophies that the characters share about themselves, right? So we see Jimmy, right, the second protagonist. We see him talk about wanting to be a good person. We see Chester, the protagonist, talk about how he used others to cope with his problems. You know, those are issues that I can relate to and I can look at myself and you know, wonder the same thing. Some of it's loosely based on how I perceive, you know, myself, and a lot of it is based on other people around me.
What made you in that turn or in that aspect then? Because you primarily focus on cocaine abuse quite a bit.
Yeah.
What made you focus in on that drug or that addiction in particular?
Yeah, I think cocaine is, again, basing back on people who share this sort of issue, you know, and this general concept of substance abuse, people that I've known and come across, I think cocaine is an easy substance to obtain, especially for age groups that are trying to party a lot and trying to just have some fun, you know. And I also think cocaine is the most in your face substance that we could have picked, right? I think it a lot of people are already sort of aware of, you know, the effects that cocaine has on us. So yeah, I just thought cocaine was a really effective substance to use for this topic.
Well,
I would agree. When I put the movie on and that opening scene came up, I was like, oh, this kind of movie. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like, well, this is one way that you open a film, folks. And there were many moments throughout the movie that it felt really personal. So good job on portraying kind of a more personal aspect to it, whether you went through that kind of addiction or whatever yourself. You wrote Chester, and I forget the actor's name who played Chester.
Cadence.
Thank you. What a shockingly accurate portrayal of kind of what addiction does, whether it's addiction to drugs or addiction to, I mean, you can run the gambit when it comes to addictions and vices. But there was a specific line in it that when Chester said it, I was just like, ooh, I've had that almost verbatim. Like said to me, and in turn I've said it almost verbatim to other people, but it's when him and Jimmy are on the swing, or when he's on the phone with Jimmy, sorry, and he's telling him, like, you just gotta live, like, you can't be down, you just gotta get back and relax, and you just gotta be in the moment and live. I was like, ooh, yep, that is that's a little close to home right there. Like I said, I've heard it both ways. So
yeah, absolutely.
I guess this would probably be more for him, but that portrayal, that writing seemed so spot on. So I'm just, I mean, as you wrote it or as he was acting it, how much of it was, did he stick to the script or did you let him kind of run with what he was interpreting Chester to need to be?
I think Cadence had a great understanding of the character, and, you know, we had so many wonderful conversations and just spending so many hours together in the same room talking about the movie. We had a really, really deep connection just relating to the movie. There were some moments in the film that were sort of improvised, but that wasn't one of them. That was a line that was taken from the script. And going back to what I was saying before and writing certain philosophies that the characters share throughout the film, a lot of that is based on myself and how I view the world and that sort of thing. And I think in Chester talking about trying to live in the moment, you know, and especially in relation to substance abuse, not even just to anything else, but wanting to live in the moment and just kind of just get fucked up. I think that was a sentiment that a lot of people can relate to. And it doesn't have to be specifically about cocaine. It could be about sex. It could be about, you know, weed. It could be about anything, really. You know, people often make insane decisions based on that ideology that it's life, you know, you just got to do what you got to do. So
you're how old, JR? You're how old?
19.
Well, you're speaking wisdom, so please stay that way, because I know you are young. You are coming into it, so maintain that. I think that's it's a great footing to have of just being able to see the world. I really respected the different points of time that you have throughout this movie, where it's Chester in sobriety and then Chester hit full swing in use. I really respected that idea. I think having that gave it alleviated the film or elevated the film, to kind of a higher standard. It felt like you held yourself and your cast to a pretty high standard on this.
Absolutely.
What kind of prep work went into just preparing your castmates for certain scenes? I know there's a couple that I would imagine were probably really awkward and you had to trust each other a lot, especially your actress having to trust you.
Yeah.
Especially. I guess, yeah, just what kind of prep work did you guys go into? Conversations did you have to have? I would imagine they had to have been pretty deep and pretty severe before shooting some of the stuff.
That's a really great question. Yeah. There was, number one, we rehearsed it a lot. We rehearsed it a really good amount. We did about a month straight worth of rehearsing, you know? So not only did we go over it over and over and over, but, you know, we kind of rehearsed it like a play almost, but also again, like having deep conversations with Cadence and the rest of the cast members and, understanding the effect that this material may have on people and can have on people. That was also a very, very important thought on our minds, especially relating to the sponsor scenes right before sobriety and, you know, during sobriety. I think those were especially important to nail down, because while I don't want the film to necessarily serve as just an anti-drug PSA, I think there's more layers to it than that. I also want people to be able to understand that someone making poor choices does not mean that they're a bad person, and that they can still make good choices later on. You know, they can still be a relatively good person later on. With that said, going into the prep work for, you know, my scenes with Alexandra and that sort of thing, we have a very, very close relationship, me and Alexandra. And so we had so many great conversations about characters and sort of this process that all of us had to go through. You know, I think all of us had this really unique and personal process to get into those characters, you know. I don't think any of these characters are any sort of reflection of who we are as people. So there was a different place that we all had to go to that wasn't us. So, you know, that applies to all of us, really. It was just a really, really personal process of saying these things out loud and making sure we're all comfortable. That was the number one priority, is making sure we're all comfortable with this. And also just rehearsing it a shit ton.
Well, I think absolutely. That's very admirable as the writer, director, cinematographer. Yeah. I mean, it cracked me up when during the end credits, your name comes up on like every list. But that speaks volumes for how you handled your set, how you handled your cast and yourself, and just making sure that everyone was comfortable, everyone was on the same page and had a full understanding. And to be able to trust each other. You hear a lot of horror stories, even these days when everything's like infinitely more kind of on lockdown, set still being kind of in turmoil. So that's comforting to hear that as an aspiring filmmaker coming into it, you are already handling your set with a conviction right out the gate of like, this is how it needs to be.
We're making a movie, you know, people shouldn't be miserable, you know, and really, everyone a part of it was a volunteer as well. So no one should be coming to do something for free and still be like miserable. Yeah, we should all be having a good time.
Every part of what they're doing.
Yeah, right. Man. We should be having a really good time. And, you know, luckily we were all so deeply passionate about the story and the script. And we just wanted to tell a story that people could talk about afterwards and relate to and you know, share their experience.
I think that's really cool, dude. As a fan of film, That's encouraging for this up and coming generation. So please don't lose that. Please don't lose that.
Yeah, you know, you made a great point earlier talking about like how there's a personal aspect of me in this film, something along those lines. And I think in anything I do, I always want it to be relatively personal, you know. And I look at a director like Sean Baker and Darren Aronofsky, who I took a lot of inspiration from for this movie. But while some of their movies may not have characters that are reflective of them as creatives, they have characters who feel so real and feel so personal. And that's what I always want to try and curate when I make movies.
Yeah. I think that's awesome, dude. How did you mention that everyone was pretty much a volunteer coming into this film? How did you pitch to your cast? Like, hey, you're going to snort coke for 2 hours. You're going to shoot up heroin a few times. Going to be abusive. Like, here's a subject matter. Who wants to be in this with me?
Well, believe me, we had a lot of people turn us down and be like, well, that's way too out of reach. And, you know, that's fine. That's okay. I get it. The material's not for everyone. But again, I think the people we had, you know, a part of the film, everyone was so passionate, right? No one was doing it for a paycheck, right? No one was doing it for any other reason other than for just straight passion and for believing in just the project as a whole. So yeah, really just based on passion, you know, and, okay. and willing to be vulnerable, you know, and, Cadence and Randall served in these producer roles to really help get that going and say, hey, you got to be a part of this kid's movie, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it was just a really, really wonderful process and just so much trust and love and passion across all of us.
It's encouraging, man. It's encouraging. Yeah,
absolutely.
You said that you just premiered it publicly. Was that like, do you like a premiere just on YouTube or did you guys do like actually set up a little...
We had a theater. Yeah, we sold out a local theater of about 180 people. So that was cool. You know, it was a really, really cool event.
Yeah.
Yeah. I posted some pictures on my Instagram. But other than that, though, no, it was a really great experience. And then that was last Friday, I believe. And then it came out on YouTube on the Sunday of that same weekend. So
how are your nerves going into your theatrical premiere? Yeah.
You know, it was interesting, you know, I mean, we hit a few small film festivals around like August and September. So I had already kind of seen it in like a theater environment, you know, so that was cool. I've seen the movie a million times, so I wasn't really feeling much. But, you know, I mean, I didn't want people to hate it. I didn't want people to walk out feeling a certain way. So at the very least, if people could come and forget about the rest of their life for a few hours, and that's all that matters to me. So
there you go. Did you get any feedback from people or what was kind of the initial response to it through the little film festivals and then your actual premiere?
Yeah, we had such an overwhelmingly positive reception to what we were doing. You know, I mean, I think that there's a lot of great takeaways from what people had said, you know, and for people to be able to recognize that, hey, like a group of young people are making a pretty cool movie. Like it was sort of inspiring to a lot of people, I think. And it was just a great response overall.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Yeah. Your soundtrack to this movie. Now, Jake and I both remembered you mentioning the last episode that you were with us of wanting to do like an actual score, like an original score. So that was going into this was like, let's see what he did. Very interesting score. I thought the intertwined with the guitar and I forget the name of the band that you use,
like Outcast Click.
Very interesting on that aspect. So how did you go handling that and tackling that? Because I know that was like a main point that you had made of wanting to have an original score.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to get copyrighted on YouTube, so that was the first thing. I mean, we got age restricted anyway, so but no, the score was, I thought it really just elevated the film. You know, I really thought it complemented everything we did so nicely. And our composer, Dina Mandello, you know, she's like a classically trained pianist. If you couldn't tell in the movie, like, she knows what she's doing relatively regarding piano. Yeah. She's awesome. So she really, again, she really just complemented the scene so well. And she was just so great to work with in the musical aspect. So just super grateful to have her on board and have her believe in the project as we all did. And then, you know, as far as like the soundtrack, you know, I do some like photography for local bands. You know, I was friends with a band and I like their music. And I just said, hey, like, can I use some of your songs? And they said, yeah, absolutely. So, and so we ended up using most of their songs for the party. Yeah, absolutely. So it was cool. It was really cool.
Awesome.
Really cool process.
How much was in your head in terms of the score actually came out? Or did she kind of be like, that's cool, but check out what I'm doing.
You know, I think Dina has a certain sense of independence, you know, and I don't want to interfere with that. So, you know, to me, I was so in love with Requiem for a Dream. I was like, you know, it's got to sound like this and this and this. But, you know, Dina did her own thing and it came out great. So I'm going to trust the composer and what she's going to do.
Right. I think you're like, Clint Mansfield, but not like, do this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's awesome. Yeah. The score was incredible. Yeah. Now, I also was really struck by Vince playing the guitar and the way that you intertwined his guitar playing, not just part of the soundtrack, but like that's kind of him processing on a couple scenes is playing the guitar and doing something.
Yeah. He plays guitar in real life. Although we did have that overdubbed by another guitar player, my friend Jack Bergen. So, but yeah, he was actually playing the guitar in those scenes.
All right.
Yeah.
Or at least during filming, did he look at you and go, wait a minute, that wasn't me?
It was just the audio process of trying to like make the guitar come out, like sound well on the audio. It's just like, we'll just redub it in post. So
Man, yeah. you're speaking like you already know what you're doing, because that's for a lot of people that don't, that might not know, a lot of dialogue, a lot of sounds, a lot of on-screen music is actually redone in a separate studio afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie was, I knew what I was going into just based on the fact that you had told us, like, hey, I love Darren Aronofsky and Requiem. I know you and I connected immediately when,
absolutely.
When you brought that up. I knew what I was getting into. I when I was watching it, it was very much like, I can see the Darren Aronofsky, like, I can see the Requiem for a Dream in this, but he's doing it in a different style. It's in a different kind of point of view, which I really respected. I also personally did respect, like, the heroin use wasn't as prominent.
Yeah.
So that was nice. The cocaine was like, good Lord, where are these kids getting the money to afford this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we actually had a few people say that. We're like, how do these kids afford that? You know, I mean, they do what they got to do, you know? Absolutely.
I kind of, like, I asked myself that, but then I also took it as like, well, they do attend parties that are free-for-alls. And
yeah,
there are times at those parties where people's stashes do just walk away.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and we see a character like Cynthia who kind of uses lust as a way for her to get ahead, you know, and we see her relationship with multiple characters in the movie as well. And a lot of that is sort of based on her drug addiction.
Drugs are bad, kids. Let's stay away from them. Yeah. So there's a little detail that made Jake wonder what time period you put the movie in. I didn't wonder the time period. I just thought it was kind of like a fun detail because you guys are, what, 19, 18?
Yeah, 18 when we made it, yeah.
Yeah. When I was, like, 14, I had a studded belt. And to see a studded belt come on screen all of a sudden in 2024, made by someone who's almost half my age, I was like, those are still around? What
the crap? Yeah.
Jake was like, does this movie take place in 2000 based on the belt? Where did you guys get a studded belt?
Yeah, I honestly do not know. That was Alexandra's belt. You know, she's like a fashion girly. You know, she's going to like fashion school right now. So I assume that was just in her wardrobe and she brought that to set as like the heroine belt per se. And, you know, we just went off that. So I didn't have any choosing in that.
Does she have like an older sister that's like 10 years older than her or something? That
I think
that
she's into that whole Y2K aesthetic sort of thing. Right. So
yeah, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it didn't take me out of the movie, but I saw the belt, and just started laughing, and was like,
it was a pretty cool belt. Yeah,
14 year old me just went, I had that. That's hilarious. Yeah, I wanted to poke fun at Jake too for thinking that took place in 2000s, considering your characters are using iPhones.
Yeah.
It's like, Jake,
I was gonna say, buddy. It would have been cool to do a period piece, but you know, I think that there's a lot of like budgeting related restrictions that come with that, you know, having to get certain things and make things look a certain way. So we didn't put a label on that.
How much of this movie, because there's a couple scenes in it that your set is clearly a real spot and your guy is clearly in a real store and all this.
Yeah.
Did you go the guerrilla route or did you get people to sign like waivers to allow you to film in these areas?
Well, we certainly didn't break in anyone's house. You know, we did get permission from everyone. You know, everyone a part of the production was always like a family friend or something of that nature. So we always had permission, luckily, thankfully. The very first scene of the movie where they're shooting up, you know, against that wall, that was guerrilla. That was probably one of the only guerrilla, you know, filming moments. And that was in the back of an abandoned church. You know, it was actually kind of cool. But we didn't get to go inside, but it was cool on the outside. It was all, like, graffitied and maybe kind of a sketchy area to be in. But funny enough, as they were doing the fake heroin, cops pull up. Cops confront us. Yeah, they come outside and they confront us. And they didn't say anything about the fake heroin, though. They thought we were graffitiing the walls because, as you can see in the movie, the walls are very, you know, graffitied.
Right.
So they confronted us about that because I guess someone called the cops on us because they thought we were doing the walls. And so I explained to them, I was like, hey, you know, we're just kind of making a movie here. And he just let us go about our business. No
That's
problem
awesome.
There. Yeah, he said, hey, nice setup, kid. And he left. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
That is a fantastic story to have with you. We had to interact with the cops while filming drugs.
Absolutely.
But the drugs were of no consequence.
They didn't even care. I was like, wow, okay. What if these were real people? You know?
Right. I'm not going to lie. That went through my head like, wait, what if that was a real drug?
Yeah, I know. It was a little scary in the moment, but ended up being fine.
Yeah. I think that's a great story, dude. That's hilarious.
Yeah. They actually ended up tearing down that church a few months later, so it doesn't even exist anymore.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Now you've got posterity. Now you can watch a film and be like, hey, that graffiti, it came across as like, ooh, yeah, this looks like a super shady spot where people that are that far into it.
It was sketchy, believe me.
Have some lookout people like, hey, just let us know if there's any awkward people wandering around.
Yeah.
All right. So we both noticed someone commented on the film on YouTube.
Mm-mm.
Oh man, I'm gonna mess up the pronunciation on this. Say it for me, because I'm pretty sure you know it. What is that? Machinima.
Yeah.
Ah, see, I'm close. See, rusty on the mic, folks. Don't.
That's
hate.
Okay.
Machinima creator.
Yeah.
Is that true? Is that where you started?
Yeah, I used to make machinimas. You know, that was like my mini film school almost. You know, I mean, for those of anyone who's not listening, machinima is this like niche form of filmmaking, typically made, you know, in animation using like a video game engine or whatever. So that's how I started. That was like my mini film school. You know, I mean, my friend Brandon and I, Brandon was the boom operator for EdgeX, but he also makes a little cameo during the party scene. There's someone that walks past Chester and Chester throws his beanie at him. That's my friend Brandon. It's blink and you'll miss it. But, you know, him and I were making machinimas at like 9 years old, you know, and we just kept doing it through the years over and over and over. And, you know, when the pandemic happened and we had a whole lot of time on our hands, we really got invested into it. You know, we started making these cool machinimas that like, you know, we're getting like a decent amount of views. And, that was like, okay, well maybe we can start to do this, like not machinima, you know, we can start to actually make real movies from that. So yeah, that was like my mini film school in a way. That's kind of how I learned editing and shot composition and that sort of thing, and lighting especially. So
that's awesome, dude. Like, way to take something from when you're 9 years old and develop it this whole time. So 10 years later, that's fantastic, man.
Yeah. I mean, my dad asked me a great question the other day, more of a statement, but I'm sure he's probably listening to this. But I mean, like, you know, he asked, like, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, did you see yourself doing what you're doing now? You know, like screening your movie in front of an audience and that sort of thing. And I told him, like, not really. No, I mean, I don't think I understood, you know, where machinima making was going to take me. You know, it was just something kind of cool I did when I got off school. So for it to have developed into this, you know, where people are spending 2 hours to watch a movie I made, it's a really, really nice feeling. You know, I'm just super grateful.
Yeah, 100%, man. Well, you deserve the credit because the movie came out great.
Thank you.
Going from Headstone of Solitude into this one, and I know Jake and I both really enjoyed what you did with Headstone. This felt like one of those just massive leaps and your style and your eye and just the art that you are developing. You took a pretty huge leap in development in that.
Thank you.
That was really encouraging to see, just watching how you were blocking the shots and your lighting was great and just the scent.
Thank you.
You was very obvious from the get-go that you took a lot of painstaking, like just attention to detail and to tell the story. So your talent is shining, my friend.
Thank you.
Keep developing that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
That was probably my favorite thing, was just being able to watch. Like, wow, he's really nailing it right here.
Thank you.
I can tell he kind of did that shot in Headstone, I remember, but now it's like, oh, look at that. He evolved it. Oh,
yeah.
And he learned a new trick. Ooh, he learned a new one.
Thank you very much.
That was really cool to be able to see.
Thank you.
Well, I don't have too much more, except what's next, dude? Are you still just kind of focusing on promoting EdgeX? Are you just living the EdgeX train for a little while, or if you already started working on the next thing?
I have to try and keep it under wraps, but the next thing is it's shot already, so
holy
I'm just
crap.
Working on that. Yeah,
you already shot it. You just said, you know, EdgeX was like a year.
Yeah, we had a lot of downtime. We started EdgeX back in like July of 2023. And then that took us well into like the spring of 2023. And then once that was done and polished and just, you know, ready for film festivals and that sort of thing, you know, I just got to developing my next film, you know, which I can't talk too much about yet, but it is, it's heavily inspired by like The Wrestler and Dallas Buyers Club. So, But yeah, you know, I really just want to keep making movies. You know, that's what it is. I enjoy telling stories, and I enjoy telling really personal, intimate stories about human beings. So,
I think it's awesome, man. Well, it comes across. So continue doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
And I know Jake and I are always here for the ride.
Thank you. You know? Thank you guys so much for watching and having me on.
It was really cool when you sent us like, guys, here's the movie. I know both of us. It's like, holy crap, he did it. This is awesome. Let's get this watched. So keep on it, dude. Thank you so much. It's good. Obviously.
Yeah.
You've got a good head on your shoulders right now. Maintain that, man.
Thank you so much.
I think as you hit kind of the next echelon or, you know, the next step into it, I think what you have to offer, what you're bringing up next is a good thing.
Especially
with Hollywood, kind of. Hollywood's in a weird spot, man. They've been in a weird spot for a few years.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think people are kind of tired of a lot of the crap in Hollywood, so it's kind of fun to see like upcoming filmmakers versus ones that are there and just seeing the the shift. So I'm happy to be able to say we know a guy who is a part of this.
Thank you very much. I think a lot of today's movies, so to speak, I think they've lost a lot of maturity, maybe, and a lot of the stories that we're telling and a lot of the humanity in the stories that we're telling. I think film and even by extension music, you know, it's the greatest way for human beings to express themselves. And film is about human beings, right? It's about who we are, and it's about showcasing different types of people. And, you know, while I think maybe a lot of films today have maybe moved away from that, I always want to try and retain that. And that's why I love a guy like Sean Baker, who just recently directed Anora, which is probably going to win Best Picture this year, believe it or not, or it's going to get some Oscar love. But if you haven't already checked out Anora, I really recommend it. I've seen it multiple times now. So that's just huge Sean Baker guy over here.
You hit a movie where you're like, well, this is my shtick. So this is what I'm watching. I love it when that happens when you watch a movie and you're just like, yep, this is my life now. This is happening. Those were always great moments. It's fantastic, dude. Well, I mean, let us, you know, go ahead and tell people where they can find you, where they can watch EdgeX and all the good stuff, man.
They can watch EdgeX on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, Sid Cinematics, which I'm sure is probably going to be linked somewhere on this video. They can also check out my Instagram, Sid Cinematics, Sid's as an S-I-D-S, and also EdgeX Film, the Instagram. And also you can rate EdgeX on Letterboxd as well. So that's cool. Also check out Movie Boners on all platforms. So
look at this guy. Look at this guy. He's like, absolutely. I'm going to plug their show. Yeah, dude, this was a blast chatting with you again.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. Thank you for having me.
You really hit this one. So,
yeah,
you know, now you're telling me you're basically pulling the Stephen King, but without novels, you're doing it with a movie. How do you go from one straight to the next? It's crazy.
It's always a grind, my man. It's always
commendable, but crazy.
Yeah. So, and I'm done with short films. It's always going to be feature films. So,
look at you. Look at you go. Someone found something they like. Well, I think it's awesome, dude. I know I can't speak for Jake, just saying we are excited to see your development. Continue to watch this. Hopefully we'll get a little perk on this next one.
Definitely give you guys a sneak peek soon. Yeah.
There you go.
Absolutely.
You don't have to. Nah, dude, this was a joy. It's so good talking
Thank
to you
again. Thank you so much. And, absolutely, man. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, dude, this was fantastic. So thank you.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure we'll have you on again at some point.
Yeah, of course. I'd love to be back, man.
Yeah. Absolutely. One of these days we'll bring you back as just a
casual guest talking about movies.
Kind of conversation. I think that would be a lot of fun. So we'll figure something out.
Yeah. Text me anytime.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Absolutely.
Well, with that, man, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Make sure you're checking out JR.
Thank you.
His movie's awesome. Go watch EdgeX. It's not for the faint of heart, but if you know us, you already know that there are times where we are going to recommend a movie that's going to make you uncomfortable. This will be one of them, because sometimes it's good for us to be a little uncomfortable.
Yeah,
so,
totally okay. Yeah.
Check out... Headstone of Solitude's available on YouTube as well, right?
Yes,
yeah. Make sure you check out Headstone of Solitude. It's unique. It's really cool. That was actually how he met you.
It's how I met him, yeah.
Check him out, guys. He deserves it. Show him some love.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Movie Boners will be coming back into full swing at some point. Wondering if Jake is going to hold off because our movie draft is kind of not leaning his way anymore. So more to come on that one. Hopefully I get to retain that buddy right there. You can't see it in the frame, JR.
Yeah, I don't think I can see it. I'm just trying to look for it.
It is. There it is. There it is.
There we go.
Alongside my Wolverine popcorn bucket.
That's awesome.
That is a sense of pride right there.
That is magical.
Thank you, everybody. Make sure you check us out on all the platforms, on the social medias. We're terrible about doing that, but there's some great memes that get posted there, so be sure to follow. Go get your cool swag. Join the fan club. I believe the last one that we just did was Hereditary. So if you want to watch a movie with Jake and I, hear us talk about it, kind of dissect it a little bit further than we normally do, check out Press Play. And with that, man, thank you, everybody. Thank you to JR.
Thank you.
We'll see you guys next time.
All righty.